And this show is live and local. It's your connection to local music and more. On the program today, we have a two-part show. First part, we'll discuss this weekend's performances by Sinfonietta Kammer, I should say performance, on Friday evening at the Krannert Center in Urbana, a program called Extraordinary Voices, featuring baritone Ricardo Herrera and music by William Schumann and Robert Schumann. And then in the second portion of the show, I'll talk with banjo player Ken Perlman, who, along with fiddler Alan Jabor, are going to be playing. Oh, I'm sorry, that's tomorrow's program. I talked with them earlier today. I'm a little confused. The Parkland College Theater. In fact, I guess I told Vic DiGeronimo the wrong program. I've got my days mixed up. Second portion of the program, Parkland College Theater's Weekend of One-Act Plays, which is this Thursday through Saturday. Through Sunday, we're going to be talking about, and there's quite a few of those, including some locally written plays. And we'll be having the author of one of those and a couple of the actors to come in and give us a little scenic demonstration on today's show. It's live and local on FM 90.9. Final movement of the Fourth Symphony of Robert Schumann, the Chamber Orchestra of Europe, conducted by Nikolaus Harnoncourt. And you can hear the complete Fourth Symphony of Schumann in performance by Sinfonietta Kammer, conducted by Ian Hobson, this Friday evening, the 5th of November at 7:30 at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, along with three works by William Schumann, who is a very different person, American composer. In fact, the program's going to start with the American Festival Overture. I might as well say that programs today on FM 90.9 are made possible with support from Sinfonietta Kammer, presenting Extraordinary Voices on Friday, November 5th, 7:30 p.m. at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Baritone Ricardo Herrera joins Sinfonia in celebration of the works of William Schumann. More information is available at 333-6280. Ricardo Herrera and Ian Hobson are both with us on Live and Local today to talk about this program. Thank you, gentlemen, very much for joining us.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
Schumann is having his 200th birth year, and so that explains the focus on Schumann's music. 100.
200.
Robert Schumann is 200. William Schumann is 100. How these guys just conveniently converged, and you're bringing them together, you know, in their births, and you guys are bringing them together on this program. How much music of William Schumann's, Ian, have you done in the past with Sinfonia?
None. We have not. He's sort of one of those slightly neglected American composers. He was born, as you say, 100 years ago. So he was slightly older contemporary of Leonard Bernstein, who very much admired his music. Schumann was more of a, New England type, not so extrovert and not so flamboyant as Bernstein in his music or as a person. But his music really touches us. There are certain pieces like the Third Symphony. He wrote, I think, 8 symphonies, or at least. It's full of pageantry and, processional quality and a little bit military. The use of percussion is a great feature of Schumann, and the use of brass instruments. It's very, very strong and dramatic the way he uses those instruments. And the piece that probably people know more than anything else is the New England Triptych, and this American Festival Overture, which was written in the 30s and premiered by Koussevitzky in Boston.
And we'll hear some of that later on in the program. The piece you're going to be hearing, you're going to be playing the featured work along with Schumann's Fourth Symphony, is this piece On Freedom's Ground. How did you select that? Is that one that you had known before, or Ricardo you knew, or how did this?
No. This is a we're going to record these pieces for Albany Records, and Peter Carmani, who's a great aficionado of American music, wanted to do this. He was a particular fan of William Schumann. He knew William Schumann and knows all the recordings of his music. And this particular piece has never been recorded. And it was written, I think, in celebration of the Statue of Liberty's 100th year. And it was written in 1983 Six. Or 84, 86. Yeah. And, it's amazing that it's never been done before. It's a very, very big part for the baritone. And the choruses, the chorus will be using the chamber singers and the Oratorio Society, which was Fred Stolzfus have prepared. And this is a five-movement work based on poems by Richard Wilbur, very patriotic. The orchestration is very colorful, and I think people are going to be blown away by this music. It's amazing that it's only been heard probably once or twice in the 80s. Live and never been recorded before.
Yeah, this is the first time that I'm performing any of Schumann's music. I knew the name of William Schumann from my time in New York. The only piece that I actually heard of his is it's called George Washington Bridge. And I remember that name because I lived close to George Washington Bridge when I was in New York. So that kind of stayed in my mind. And the other way I knew of his name and his music was through my days at Juilliard, where the new president, or the current president, Joseph Polizzi, he mentioned his name several times, and he talked about his music. I think Polizzi has a book.
He's written a biography
on Schumann. So it's actually quite an honor for me to be part of this program on this solo with the majestic piece of On Freedom's Ground, because it's very challenging, and it's very from what I've heard so far in the rehearsals that I've had with accompanists, is that it has all these densities, these textures that I can only wait, I can only hope that it's going to be marvelous with the orchestra, because it's not your simple harmony, it's not your simple triad, it's not at all, it's very polyphonic at times and polytonal. And I feel excited about this program for the poetry, but also for the music itself.
Tell me a little bit about the poetry.
The poetry is very, like Ian says, it's patriotic. It gives hope. It gives, it's a little bit of a cleansing at times of the things that we have done wrong in our history. And Richard Wilbur points that out, of the things that we did wrong in the past. However, it ends up very optimistic, saying that we are all still immigrants, but we continue to travel, and we have the wind on our side. So it's a very positive note at the end in terms of the meaning of the words, and of course in terms of the music, it's high B flats on the sopranos and sustained forever. It makes me remind myself of. First times I did Beethoven's Ninth as a chorus member, and then later on as a soloist, where Beethoven just writes super high notes for the sopranos for 30 seconds and 40 seconds and 50 seconds, and he expects them to sustain those sounds, and
not just the sopranos either.
Well, or everybody else. I have students in the chorale and in the choirs that are going to be performing this piece, and they say it's about the same, sustaining all those high notes.
Well, when you were just talking about the Schumann piece, that's exactly what I thought of. Was the couple of times I sang that piece. It's not the Beethoven. Mm-hmm. It's something I personally wouldn't care to sing again, but I would be more than happy to hear it many times. But it was really pretty grueling. Ricardo, remind me, where are you from originally?
originally from El Paso, Texas.
And your family?
My family is from Mexico. So my father worked for the both governments at one point before I was born, and so the family moved to the U.S. Then I was born, my brother was born. And after completing my studies there in El Paso, my family decided to go back to Mexico. My studies, I mean elementary and junior high. And then I went back with them, and then for my college, I came back to the U.S., and I did my undergrad at UT El Paso in music education. Then after that, I moved to New York for my master's at Juilliard.
How, you know, as I guess the son of immigrants, how do these texts strike you? Do they have any different kind of meaning for you than
absolutely
average Joe?
Well,
average non-immigrant Joe.
I actually believe what I'm saying there in terms of we are all immigrants. I think there's no average Joe in America right now. Everybody has a history of immigration, and well, maybe except for a few people who were, you know, their parents and their ancestors were born here in these lands, which I don't know any of. I know some people close to that in Arizona, but I don't know actually for sure if they were born here. So it really makes a big impact on me because it's a land of opportunity, a land of very good things, of richness and open arms, but it's also fragile in the way that we can abuse these rights and these richness. So it's a good way to put together a message of hope. And even though it's written for the 100th anniversary in 1986 of the Statue of Liberty, it's very valid today, especially with the crisis that we're going through. It's very valid to remind ourselves that we are one. Like one part in the poem, it says, we are all put together as in pieces, like that Statue of Liberty was once put together, but we have a core of iron and we'll survive because we have a torch in our hand.
So in a way, it's sort of the ultimate patriotism. I know that, you know, people have different points of view of this. Some people will say it's unpatriotic to criticize your country. Other people will say it's, you know, sort of the height of patriotism to be able to say critical things about the country, as you suggest that maybe Richard Wilbur does at some level, but then ultimately to come around and say, you know, I love this country and ultimately wish for it the best and will do my best to ensure that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sounds like that's somewhat the message of this piece.
Correct, yeah.
Well, I would say we would share with folks some of that music, except as you've pointed out, there's no recording yet until this weekend is through, but we do have, Ian, you suggested that the Third Symphony of William Schumann is at least has some of the characteristics maybe that On Freedom's Ground has.
Well, certainly in the kind of use of the orchestra, the expansive. Schumann was like Copland in the sense that he could project the open spaces, the feeling of America, the great and the beautiful in his music, and the Third Symphony, I think. Probably you can find a place in it where there's quite a lot of percussion and brass fanfares to show the kind of skill and virtuosity that Schumann has in his writing.
Well, inevitably, last movements tend to bring it all crashing down. So here's at least some of the last movement, the final toccata from William Schumann's Third Symphony. It's amazing the number of Third Symphonies written in the 20th century that have come to be known as classics of the 20th century, Copland's being one of those, and then this is one of them. And Leonard Bernstein is conducting the New York Philharmonic in this performance, and you can hear Schumann's On Freedom's Ground on Friday night's concert by Symphony at a Kammer. We're talking with Ian Hobson and Ricardo Herrera here on Live and Local.
We'll be right back.
It's the final movement of the Third Symphony of American composer William Schumann. He was born in 1910, and that performance was given by the New York Philharmonic, conducted by Leonard Bernstein. And while that particular piece is not on the program on Friday night by Sinfonietta Kammer, there are three other of William Schumann's works that are. A Prelude for Voices, which is for choir alone, and then the American Festival Overture, which we'll hear part of in just a minute. And then the work that we've primarily been talking about here with conductor Ian Hobson, and also with a soloist for the piece, Ricardo Herrera, baritone. It's called On Freedom's Ground. And I wanted to ask you, Ricardo, before we let you guys go, since, you know, there is no recording of this and, you know, you've not even heard the orchestra yet. I guess you've peeked your head in at rehearsals maybe, but otherwise you've been experiencing piano so far. And as people charged with learning music in this day of recordings where almost everything has been recorded, we do end up, you know, pretty often heavily relying on recordings. If for nothing else, you know, how does it basically go, and are there certain traditions in the performances? In this case, if there are any, we don't know about them, right? So what makes it, what are the challenges then facing you to learn this piece?
Well, you have to go to Music 101, I guess, and get your old metronome out and go in and review your rhythms and decipher all these things that you have in front of you. You just go very slowly at first to make sure that you're not learning it wrong. Because some rhythms are complicated, and you have to make sure that you're lining up with the harmonists underneath. Like I said, one of the difficulties of this piece is the harmonies underneath the vocal line. If you isolate the vocal line, is very singable. It's a beautiful line, but it's a little bit in disguise with all the polytonality underneath. So that's a challenge in itself for any singer who hasn't heard this piece before. You have to learn how your line fits into those harmonies. So you have to go very slowly at first. And sometimes, you know, just isolate it from the harmonies and make sure that you have your line there. It's you own it more, I guess. You depend on your own research instead of somebody else's research. So in the end, you fall in love with it a little bit more than the typical piece that you just listen to somebody else's rendition of it and kind of reproduce it. This one, you feel like you have invested more time in it.
I think I shouldn't even say we, certainly in my own case. It's easy to get lazy a little bit and forget all of the ear training skills you learn, and maybe what minimal piano skills you may have learned. And gee, I actually do know how to study and learn a piece from scratch, but, well, there's this recording of, you know, the umpteenth recording of Beethoven something or another. I'll listen to that, and, well, you get an idea of it, but ultimately then you don't, as you say, own the piece. So it's got to be a lot of fun that way, too.
It's more fun. It takes more time, for sure. And it's more, you know, bumping your head against the wall when you know that it's not right and it's still not right. But in the end, it's more rewarding.
I'm thinking of the number of times where I have sat down to learn a piece for orchestra where there was no recording, and I'm looking at it and I start to despair, thinking, how am I ever going to learn this thing? I don't know how it goes. And then eventually, over time, and then,
Schumann is very meticulous in his directions. His metronome marks are very considered, and sometimes he modulates metrically. That is, you know, he may give you a tempo, and then all of a sudden you have to go twice as fast, and then you have to go twice as fast as that. So if you miscalculate, you get into impossible tempo areas.
Miscalculate on the slower end of things.
Yes, you
your orchestra will let you know quickly if you've miscalculated.
Exactly. And certainly the choir. The choir is required to sing very, very intricate rhythms, a lot of syncopation, sort of jazzy things in there. Mm-hmm. And as Ricardo said, the harmonies are not simple. They are very beautiful. It's not like dissonant music just for the sake of it. It's very well crafted, but he does tell you if you study the piece carefully, you don't really need to go into historical context. You can learn a lot from just studying the score.
Well, and you have the text. you know, there are the words that tell you a lot.
Of course.
I mean, after all, the composer chose to set a text for some reason.
Yeah, it makes sense. From, I think, almost every single instance, it makes sense on the crescendos that he does, the slowing down of the rhythms. All these make sense with the poetry itself, with the emotions underneath the poetry, I think.
Well, listeners, I hope are sufficiently intrigued, at least by as best as we can describe a piece that we can't share with you directly, to go out and hear on Freedom's Ground of William Schumann Friday night at the Krannert Center. Sinfonia da Camera is performing along with University of Illinois Chorale and Oratorio Society. Fred Stolzfus will lead them in William Schumann's Prelude for Voices. Ian Hobson will, of course, conduct the rest of the program, and Ricardo Herrera featured as the baritone soloist in On Freedom's Ground. And then you can also hear Robert Schumann's Fourth Symphony, since it's his bicentennial year. It's William Schumann's centennial year, and that concert is at 7:30 on Friday night. For more information, go to the Krannert Center website. It's krannertcenter.com. And thank you both very much for joining us on the show.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Kevin.
In a moment, we'll be talking with Jennifer Garan, who is, as she just told me a moment ago, making her playwriting debut this weekend with this weekend of one-act plays at Parkland College Theater, and she's brought along some of her actors with her, so we'll talk about that and her play. Meanwhile, here is the opening of the American Festival Overture of William Schumann. Once again, it's Leonard Bernstein, in this case with the Los Angeles Philharmonic. American Festival Overture of William Schumann in a performance by the Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra conducted by Leonard Bernstein. Heard on Live and Local on FM 90.9, and you can hear that complete work played on Friday night's concert by Sinfonia da Camera at the Krannert Center in Urbana. Today's programs are made possible by WGLT-FM in Bloomington Normal, hosting Radio Faces on Friday, November 5th, featuring dinner, cocktails, and conversation with NPR Science Desk correspondent Robert Krulwich, excuse me. Tickets and information are at WGLT.org. And we have support from Silver Creek in downtown Urbana, serving lunch and dinner every day with a brunch on Sunday. For 20 years, Silver Creek has been bringing to the table freshly baked artisan breads, prime steaks and chops, fresh fish and pasta dishes, and delightful pastries made by Silver Creek's pastry chef. On this portion of the show, we have Jennifer Garan, who is the playwright for something called Mercy Falls. It's on a program this weekend of one-act plays at Parkland College Theater. There are two different evenings and two different programs. Rather, I should say, two different evenings of each of two different programs. The first set of one-acts will be on Thursday and Saturday at 7:30, and the second set of one-acts, including Jennifer's play, will be on Friday at 7:30 and Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Jennifer Garan has brought in with her some of her actors, Angela Schmidt is somebody else I know, Angela Schneider, sorry, Prue Runkle, and Claire Cowley. And thank you all very much for coming in.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Jennifer Garan, tell us about this play, Mercy Falls, and how recently was it written? This is your playwriting debut, I understand.
It is my playwriting debut. It was actually written maybe about 6 months ago. One scene was written, and then maybe 4 months ago, another scene was written. And I have been writing, but this particular play was more of an impulse when Parkland sent out request for submissions for one acts. I was trying to think what I could direct, and it occurred to me that I had the first two scenes of a play I was writing on my desktop, and I thought, well, I can put those two together and make it a little one act. And that's what I did. So it's actually the beginning of a longer play.
So this was because you couldn't dream anything else to direct. So you thought, well, just do this thing.
Exactly. And they took it. So it's a bit of a surprise to me as well.
Well, what made you decide to suddenly write a play?
Oh, well, I've always wanted to do that. And since I retired from teaching, I have been writing. But this was not the one I thought I would be making my debut on. So.
Is there another one you thought you'd be making your debut on?
Yeah,
we'll talk about
that
when you next put that, when you put that one on.
That's right. Well, we'll wait for that one. But this particular piece is really about humor and aging. And if we can keep a sense of humor and support one another and be patient one another and age gracefully together. And ironically, the bulk of this little one act that we have here comes from a story that an older friend of mine told me about a dream that she had. And it was so funny to me that I took the plot of her dream and then embellished it into the scene of this play.
And the title, Mercy Falls, comes from?
That is the town name where the Fole sisters live, Mercy Falls, Illinois.
The Fole sisters?
The Fole sisters, F-U-L-L. And we have Joy Fole and Faith Fole. And hopeful.
Very clever. Do you want to tell the dream, or do you just want to sort of outline the story? Or is that the same thing?
Yeah, at this point, it's pretty much the same thing. And one of the reasons why I don't want to tell the whole dream is because it's a teaser. I want people to come and see just happens. So we've got a couple short little segments of the play with each of these actresses in them to give a flavor of what it is.
So I was watching people raise their hands as you named those. So Prue Runkle, you are Joy Fole.
Yes.
And
yes.
Angela Schneider is Hope Fole, and Claire Cowley is Faith Fole. Did I get those all right?
Yeah, that's right.
How about that? Who's the first scene?
Joy and Hope.
Mm-hmm. All right. So it's Angela and Prue,
yes,
from Mercy Falls of Jennifer Grant here in Live and Local.
Who's the dummy that left the keys in the door?
I don't appreciate being called dummy, Joy. Thank you.
As if you never misplaced your keys. It's amazing to me that I ever actually enjoyed shopping at the Mercy Falls Mall.
What did you buy this time?
A new dress for the church potluck.
That's nice.
It's reversible.
Reversible?
Yes, I discovered that in the dressing room. I put it on, and when the sales lady saw me, she told me I had it on backwards.
How did you do that?
Well, there's darts on both sides. How was I to know which was the front? My shoulder blades are higher than my boobs are. I actually prefer the way my blades fit. My girls have gone south and they ain't coming back.
Oh, honestly, Joy, why don't you put it on so I can see it?
Which way?
Oh, whichever way you wish. Back so soon?
Oh, I could not find my sunglasses.
I think I know where they are.
It's okay. I'm too tired now. I just need to relax. I had the worst dream last night.
Really? Do you want to talk about it?
Well, I was at the church attending a potluck.
Yes?
And when I went to the serving table, I couldn't find the plates.
Oh, that sounds like a nightmare.
Yes. So I started searching around for them. I went to the kitchen. Not there. I went into the lobby. Not there. I even searched the sanctuary. Imagine going to a potluck with no plates. And by the time I got back to the serving table, the food was all put away.
getting a kick out of watching Jennifer while you guys are reading these things because she's following along, you know, mouthing and their eyes are getting big. Which reminds me, if you want to know what Jennifer Grand looks like, get hold of the Parkland Theater brochure for this year. And she's right, at the, if I remember, on the top of the cover with
the biggest mouth and the totem pole is what I call myself, yeah. And hopefully I don't walk around that way all the time.
So that was, those were, we, there was kind of two scenes run together.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's right.
From Mercy Falls by Jennifer Grand. And
you're speechless.
Well, I'm kind of speechless. I mean, I'm a little amused because Prue Runkle, who was joyful, told me a couple weeks ago that you haven't acted in 40 years.
45 years. 45 since I've been
years.
On stage, yes.
What possessed you to suddenly get back on stage? You've produced lots of plays, I know, but what made you decide to do this?
Well, I just wanted another experience, and I learned that these plays were, you know, there was going to be a weekend of one acts, and I thought maybe I could handle a one act, the memorizing. And then.
Were you right?
Well, I don't know, because I'm in two of the plays, so I'm, you know, my ego didn't let me say no to the second request for me. But Jennifer and I have talked in the voice I use and in the character I use, so she knew that character and wanted that character.
What, you've just made up that this is a persona of yours you carry around or something?
No, this is somebody that, from my hometown in Iowa. And that's how she talked. So
you're channeling this person.
I'm channeling it. Yes, yeah. Yes, it's fun.
So Jennifer, you wrote this character into your play.
You know, it's a joint effort here, because I had these three characters before I ever imagined Prue's character in there, but then when this became a one act and I thought about who could play these parts, I thought, oh, Joy could become Mrs. Buma.
That's the actual name of the name of the actual person.
Yes, yes. And I've just always got a kick out of Prue when she does this impersonation of her old neighbor, Mrs. Buma. She's got so much character and everything, and I thought, oh, I would just love to have a Mrs. Buma be one of the sisters in this play. So I encouraged her to audition, and she's tried to run out a couple times, but we grab her and bring her back, and she's gonna make it.
Well, you know, and obviously from, you know, since I said that, Jennifer, you're on the cover of the Parkland Theater, you do some acting, and you indicated earlier you've done some teaching. You were at Judah Christian School for a while teaching drama
and speech, yeah.
And Angela, are you still teaching at Franklin Middle School?
Well, I retired back in 07, but I couldn't stay away. I'm back at Franklin as a substitute teacher. I spend maybe 2 or 3 days a week subbing at Franklin.
And how long did you teach
at Franklin?
At Franklin, yeah.
I was there from 91 until 07.
And how long were you teaching drama in general?
Oh, altogether about 32 years.
And how often have you been on stage, not directing?
On stage, not directing? Well, when I was younger, quite a bit. And then I took the time off with the children and with my career and my husband. My husband does a lot of acting, so I supported him and his endeavors. I think I got back involved when we moved here to Illinois, and Parkland has been the place where I have sort of hung my acting shoes.
And Claire, I don't mean to ignore you just because I happen to know these other fine ladies here. And, you know, you're going to have to grow some gray hair in order to, you know, I had to look up when you were speaking and think, that's not the person who just sat in the chair. She did a nice job with the voicing.
Oh, thank you.
What's your background that you bring to this show?
Well, I went to Parkland for 2 years and was a scholarship student with their theater program, so this is my return to Parkland, and I also have a BA in theater from North Central College in Naperville, and this is my first time acting in about 2 years, so I'm quite excited.
Yeah, are you in any of the, we know that Prue's in more than one of these one acts, or Angela or Claire, are you doing more than one?
No, this is my only one act.
The only one. I should probably kind of run down the others. There are some others that are also locally written plays. The Mansion by Leslie Leotold. Is she related to Jimmy John? Yes, who is Jimmy John Leotold. In case you didn't know that, that's his name. We also have a play called Funeral Parlor by Christopher Durang. That's not one of the local ones. David Ives' The Philadelphia, I hope that's right. Save Me is one of the local ones. Joan Brodmann's play. The Audition by Tom Miller, also locally written. No Evil by Emily Jenkins. Due Upon Deceit, locally written by Brian K. Morris. And then we have Mercy Falls, of course, Jennifer Grand. The Age of Stupid, Part 3, locally written by Richard Morris. And then The Valiant by Holworthy Hall and Robert Middlemass. These are all one-act plays that are going to be at Parkland College Theater this weekend. The first five that I mentioned will be on Thursday and Saturday evening at 7:30. And the Thursday tickets, by the way, are half price. And then the last five that I mentioned are Friday evening at 7:30 and Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. And for more information, you can go to theater.parkland.edu. And I should also say that if you do have a Parkland brochure, you'll see on there the Glass Menagerie. These are actually taking the place of the Glass Menagerie. Do we know why? I didn't ask Dallas Street. It's just the fact that they are. So it's a great opportunity for folks like Jennifer to get their playwriting debuts and like Prue to come back to the stage after 45 years. And to our audience to be able to go out and hear some wonderful productions. I mean, I can't say enough about Parkland College Theater's productions. I've seen lots of plays there, and everybody does a splendid job. It's a great community resource.
It's a wonderful theater. No bad seats.
Well, that's also true. Yeah. Small space, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. You can see and hear from everywhere, and it's a great opportunity for people to go see theater that you probably haven't seen before, and for community members to get involved in theater, whether it's backstage or on stage or directing. So, again, it's theater.parkland.edu. Prue Runkle, Angela Schneider, Jennifer Grand, Claire Cowley, thanks very much for joining us on Live and Local.
Thank you.
Best of luck with the shows.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You're listening to Illinois Public Media, WYNL-FM and HD1 and HD2 Urbana, with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville. WYNL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. And support for our show comes in part from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from noon to 4 in the Bouvance Tasting Room. More information is at thecorkscrew.com. We'll have a partly sunny afternoon with a high temperature around 55 degrees. Tonight, mostly clear, the low around 32. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high around 55 as well. And we're at 52 degrees right now. And on tomorrow's show, we will have Alan Jabor and Ken Perlman, who are going to be at Techline Gallery performing some Appalachian music and more tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. And other guests as well on Live and Local. Hope you'll join us from noon to 1 tomorrow. And apparently the show Mercy Falls, the play Mercy Falls, is going to begin with this music by Leroy Anderson. Is called Plink, Plank, Plunk. Stay tuned, those of you listening to 90.9, for the Writer's Almanac at 101. Classical music starts on that frequency at 106. Classical music starts on 101.1 FM at 101 PM. I'm Kevin Kelly. Thanks for joining me.